Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of the Story Hack Podcast. The Story Hack Podcast features action, adventure, and mystery stories, mostly from the public domain. Story Hack is also a print magazine which publishes new action and adventure stories in a wide variety of genres. Visit storyhack.com today for more information. Today, we will hear part 3 of Wanderers of the Wolf Moon by Nelson S. Bond.
Chapter 3. Bredon said, "All right, Tom, he dumped them here. I have a few words to say." He glanced about him pompously. "Now, folks, naturally we want to get away from here as soon as possible. Therefore, I delegate you, Sparks, to immediately get a message off, an SOS to the nearest space cruiser." Hannigan grinned. It was not a pleasant grin. He took his time answering. He spat thoughtfully on the ground before him, lifted his head. He said, "A message, huh? That's what I said. And what'll I send it with?" drawled Sparks. "Tom-toms." Bredon flushed darkly. "I believe the life skiff was equipped with a radio, and theoretically you are a radio operator. Finest radio money can buy," interpolated J. Foster Andrews proudly. "Put a million credits into the carefree, best equipment throughout." Sparks looked from one to another of them, grinned insolently. "You're both right. I am a radio operator and there was a radio, but we crashed, remember? On account of some dope sleeve got caught in the master switch." "That will do," snapped Bredon angrily. He stared at the bandy-legged little redhead. "You mean the radio was broken?" "It wasn't helped none. The tubes was made out of glass, and glass don't bounce so good." Greg Malcolm said thoughtfully, "Sparks, can't you fix it?" "Well, Meb, but not in 5 minutes. Maybe not in 5 years. I won't know till I get going on it." Bredon frowned. "I'll handle this, Malcolm," he crisped. "Again to the radio man, well, you get to work on it immediately, and as soon as you get it fixed, send out an SOS advising the patrol where we are." "Speaking of which," insinuated Sparks, "where are we?" Bredon glared at him wrathfully. Why on one of the satellites of Saturn, of course. Any fool can see that." "Oh, Q. But does any fool know which one, or shall I tell you it's Titan? And when you know that, then what?" "Titan wasn't named that on account of it was a pimple. It's a big place. Well, I tell the patrol, Soss, stranded in the middle of we don't know where, somewhere on Titan, maybe. They'll be hunting for us till we've got whiskers down to our knees." Bredon's irate look vanished. He looked stricken. He said, I don't know, we have a compass." Once again, it was Gregory Malcolm who entered into the conversation. He had been toying, almost absent-mindedly, with a funnel taken from the skiff stores. Into this he had poured a small portion of water. His right forefinger was pressed to the bottom of the tube, closing it. He said, "I can answer part of that question now. Enough to cut the search in half anyway. We're in the northern hemisphere of the satellite." Maud Andrews looked at him sharply as if noticing him for the first time in her life. "How?" she asked. "Did you know that, Malcolm?" Greg said, "Watch this." He released his finger at the base of the funnel gently, carefully, taking care not to shake it. The captured water swirled and trickled through the opening. Greg said, "Notice the direction in which the water whirlpools. Clockwise. On the northern hemisphere of any normally revolving heavenly body, water released from a basin, funnel, container of any sort swirls in that direction. In the southern hemisphere, it swirls counterclockwise. Maybe you've noticed in bathtubs or—" Bredon said impatiently, "Never mind the speeches, Malcolm. A very clever bit of reasoning, if it's true. Do you think you can figure out our exact latitude and longitude from that?" Greg met his gaze levelly. "Not from that," he said, "nor from anything else. Perhaps you've forgotten that latitude and longitude are artificial inventions of man's, based in one case on an imaginary equator, and in the other on an arbitrarily appointed line like Greenwich. But I believe I can approximate our position and state it in such a way as to cut to a minimum the time of any search that might be made for us. That is, if a space patrol ever comes close enough to get within range of Sparks' radio." "When?" said Sparks. "And if I get it fixed?" "When?" said Malcolm confidently. "You get it fixed." Bredon gave in with as good grace as he could muster. "Well, all right," he conceded grudgingly. "We'll let that rest for now. Meanwhile, it is apparent that we can't escape Titan or wherever we are immediately. That being the case, our first task will be to set up a camp. This is as good a spot as any. We'll stay right here by the ship. We'll use the ship to sleep in at nights." Greg coughed apologetically. "Mr. Bredon." "Well, what now? More funnels, Malcolm. If you'll excuse me, sir, I don't believe it wise to make camp here, nor to use the skiff for sleeping purposes. And why not, my man? That was Jay Foster. The conservation of what little fuel and power we have for one thing, said Greg. Mr. Bredon's idea of using the skiff to sleep in was undoubtedly based on the plan of using the heating units. That we must not do. The time may come when we will need the skiff again badly. We must save its fuel and electromotors. And as for making camp here beside the ship, he hesitated. Crystal Andrews, her voice a trifle edged as had been that of her father, prodded him for reply. Well, she demanded. Go on, Malcolm. It wouldn't be safe, miss. This is an exposed and vulnerable spot. Titan has dangerous denizens. The words came reluctantly. It would be much safer to take refuge in the hills, in one of those caves up there. Crystal gasped, caves, us living in a cave, ridiculous. Jay Foster echoed her words vehemently. Bredon laughed curtly. Mrs. Andrews made a gesture of repugnance with a slim, pale, exquisitely manicured hand. Bert Andrews snorted. Of the tycoon's family, only Maud Andrew showed any inclination to heed the secretary's suggestion. Her old eyes glinted shrewdly, her head made the ghost of a pleased nod. But others more openly approved his plan. The maid Tina, watching Malcolm with curious attentiveness, nodded and said, "That is wise. I have heard tales about Titan and its denizens." Tommy O'Dowell grinned delightedly. He said, "Caves, boy caves, old-time stuff, huh, Greg?" And Sparks Hannigan had said, "That's right, folks, and it's past noon now. Might as well get going right away so as we can get settled before dark. Right, Greg?" And yet again there was the counterplay, the balance of Bredon's wealth, Bredon's name, and Bredon's accustomed authority to the calm, sane logic of the slim young secretary. Bredon's curt laugh changed to something definitely antagonistic. His words sheared the muttering like a keen blade. "Very interesting, Malcolm. But wholly impractical and completely absurd. We will remain here. And now," he glanced at the high-riding sun, "and now I think we should eat before setting up our camp. Tommy Hannigan, bring the electro stove from the skiff. Tina, prepare lunch. We'll pursue a more intelligent discussion of our situation on full stomachs. Malcolm, bring cases from the skiff. We'll build a rough table out here in the open." He scowled impatiently, authoritatively, about the strangely silent group.
This is the end of episode 69. Thank you for listening. If you want to support the podcast, please visit storyhack.com and check out issues of the magazine or our other anthology publications. You'll be glad you did.